From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley this week filed an impeachment resolution aimed at Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, which now triggers an investigation by the House Judiciary Committee. Pressley filed the resolution after fresh scrutiny on Kavanaugh's past from a New York Times article published over the weekend. Specifically, the paper published in its opinion section an excerpt from a new book by two of its reporters. The book, The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, An Investigation, details allegations made by women other than Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, who famously testified before the Senate last year, saying Kavanaugh tried to rape her in high school. The Times piece focuses on Deborah Ramirez, who says that Kavanaugh exposed himself to her at a Yale University party and caused her to touch his genitals. The FBI apparently declined to investigate that incident. My guest is Megan Peterson, Executive Director at Gender Justice, a legal and policy advocacy organization committed to gender, economic, and reproductive justice. Welcome to the program, Megan.
Thank you for having me.
So we last spoke to you last year, almost about a year ago, when the hearings featuring Dr. Christine Blasey Ford were taking place. It was a very, very big news. There were protesters outside. First, Christine Blasey Ford testified, and then Kavanaugh testified. And it made for very, very interesting viewing and a very powerful moment. Kavanaugh, of course, won that battle. What do you make of this New York Times essay? And I should mention that the paper has come under fire from some for how it published it. But what do you make of these allegations that focus on Deborah Ramirez rather than Ford?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity that the Times investigation and article is providing for us to return to this question and return to the conversation about the reality that the investigation that was undertaken by the FBI last year around the time of the hearings and in concert with the hearings, you know, really was a sham. It really did, was happening as a political cover primarily. Their information lays bare how uninvested, ultimately, the investigators were in speaking with people who had firsthand knowledge of the justice's misconduct. And I think that it's completely appropriate that we be revisiting this subject and saying that we do need a thorough, full, and fair investigation into Justice Kavanaugh's past and his history of his treatment towards women.
So the Times article focused on Deborah Ramirez. Apparently there was a second woman or a story of a second woman that there were allegations had a very similar experience to Ramirez, being at a party with at the same party as Brett Kavanaugh at Yale University and witnessing him exposing himself. But the Times essay, in its opinion section, which was this excerpt from the book, did not include that. The Times added a note saying an earlier version of this article, which was adapted from a forthcoming book, did not include one element of the book's account regarding an assertion by a Yale classmate that friends of Brett Kavanaugh pushed his penis into the hand of a female student at a drunken dorm party. The book reports that the female student declined to be interviewed, and friends say that she does not recall the incident. That information has been added to the article. Now, those on the right who support Kavanaugh, who support Trump, are essentially using this incident or how the New York Times handled this to discredit this entire allegation of Ramirez. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think that one only needs to look at what happened in the wake of the hearings to Dr. Ford, the way that her life was turned inside out and upside down and continues to be harmed. You know, she's still not able to go back to living a regular life here, you know, a year later. And that to me makes it not at all surprising that people with firsthand experiences would not want to come forward publicly, and makes the fact that there were so many individuals proactively reaching out to the FBI, with information or looking to corroborate Ms. Ramirez's story and being ignored by the FBI, that much more alarming and disturbing. Because there is a high price to pay, quite honestly, in coming forward. And that when there was supposed to be an investigation into these charges, people who were willing to take that risk, who were willing to share what they knew, were ignored, is pretty disturbing.
Right. I mean, one cannot certainly blame the second woman if she is choosing to protect herself. Victims of sexual abuse have every right to choose under what circumstances they speak out, if at all, about what they experienced, right? And that's an important issue. That doesn't necessarily mean no crime was committed.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I want to quote from the New York Times essay echoing what you just said. In the words of the authors, Ms. Ramirez's legal team, and this is Deborah Ramirez, the person who has been named, gave the FBI a list of at least 25 individuals who may have had corroborating evidence of what she said, but the Bureau, in its supplemental background investigation, interviewed none of them, though we learned many of these potential witnesses tried in vain to reach the FBI on their own. So, Megan, either the FBI decided to keep their focus narrow, deliberately failed to investigate an important lead at this very critical time, or they were directed by Congress or members of Congress or members of the Senate to limit the scope of their investigation. As far as you can tell, which is it?
Well, I have no inside knowledge on which that might be, but I think the evidence certainly points to the fact that the FBI investigation was unnecessarily rushed. It was not thorough for whatever reason, and I think the timing points directly to the political expediency of the timeline being an excuse for a lack of a thorough investigation. And so I think it makes sense that with these new allegations coming forward, not just of other people like Ms. Ramirez, whose claims, were not thoroughly investigated, but of the way in which the FBI handled the investigation, that it's totally fair for us to be saying now that the time has come now. It is later than it should be, but it's not too late for us to actually get a full understanding of Justice Kavanaugh's past treatment of women, and American voters deserve that. They deserve a full hearing on really his history and his record on the treatment of women. And frankly, our institutions deserve that. The Senate and the Supreme Court, their integrity has been harmed by this, rush job to push him through and to have kind of a sham investigation as cover.
Right. I mean, even if it was the Senate that or senators that directed the FBI to narrow their investigation, or the FBI itself failing to follow a lead, either of those options suggest that there was a big failure at some place in that whole incident last year. And we have to remember that Kavanaugh was confirmed by the narrowest majority that a Supreme Court member has seen in recent years, or perhaps at all. It was a 50-48 vote, I believe. And so that whole confirmation vote could have gone one way or another. And also, Megan, we should not forget his performance, if you will, when he testified the next day in front of the Senate. I remember you and I speaking about how shocking his words and actions and whole attitude was, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's been interesting to see some of the public opinion research that has come out, since the hearings, really tracking how cataclysmic the hearings and the entire Kavanaugh affair has been.
Right, I understand there was a poll earlier this year that was scrutinizing how voters, how the public has viewed Kavanaugh. This is now a member of our Supreme Court. Can you tell us what that poll found?
Absolutely. Well, 57% of voters do believe that Kavanaugh lied under oath during his hearings. And interestingly, in terms of the effect that the hearings have had culturally and politically, They really have been profound in terms of the conversations that we have been having within our families, within our friend relationships, about the experience of sexual harassment, about gender inequality, about the role of men and women in positions of power in government. The Kavanaugh hearings really prompted some deep soul searching about who should have the power, and whether the power is fair or if it's actually quite imbalanced. And I think that is potentially one of the things I think could be a bright spot coming out of the hearings, is that I think people really did move in their understanding of the impact of when you do have gender disparity in political power and in the government, you know, what that results in. And it results in things like Kavanaugh being confirmed to the highest court of the land.
And at the same time that this fresh scrutiny on Kavanaugh is coming, there was a very, very disturbing study of rape in the United States. I don't know if you saw this, that found that one in 16 women in the United States report their very first sexual experience ever being one of sexual assault, and that the average age at which that happened was 15. When I saw that, one of the things I thought about was Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. As a high school student, essentially surviving a rape attack. This is something that women are unfortunately far too familiar with. To me, that study also underscored what the state of sexual violence is in this country.
Yes, absolutely. I think that the Kavanaugh hearings inspired a lot of kitchen table conversations, a lot of discussions around, over meals or with friends and family. That certainly is true for me, and I think is a true experience for a lot of women in America, of really maybe telling their stories for the first time, or men hearing multiple stories in a short period of time, and it kind of coming over them like a wave, like, whoa, they had no idea just how serious or severe or widespread these issues are. And I think it does provide, kind of a reckoning for us. And I think that research that you just mentioned falls right into line with that. One of the interesting pieces of data coming out specifically about the Kavanaugh hearings is that one in four women reported that they re-experienced trauma or difficult feelings about past experiences as a result of the events around Kavanaugh's confirmation. Mm-hmm. And so it was a visceral and emotional experience, right? I think for the entire country, with some exceptions, which is that for some minorities of groups, primarily more conservative men, white men, the Kavanaugh hearings really pushed them backwards on gender equality and on women's rights. It did have kind of the opposite effect that it had for everyone else in the country.
Well, I want to quote from that same survey earlier this year that you've just been citing, of how the public viewed what transpired last year. As a result of Justice Kavanaugh being appointed to the Supreme Court, 4 in 10 voters think fewer women will come forward in cases of sexual harassment or assault. More people will not believe women, and more men will feel they can get away with sexual harassment or assault. About 1/3 of voters think Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation would result in more men feeling entitled to treat women as sexual objects. Women voters are more likely than men to say these are likely outcomes of Justice Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court. So here we are now, where Kavanaugh is facing an impeachment proceeding. There's a resolution that Ayanna Pressley filed, as I mentioned. And this now means that the House Judiciary Committee will be investigating this, as opposed to the Senate last year, or the Senate committee last year in question. Do you have any hope that the House Judiciary Committee will follow up on those leads that the Senate and or the FBI missed last year?
I certainly would encourage them to do so. Seems like a very obvious place to start. You don't have to scratch very far below the surface. Seems to find a whole list of people who are ready to share what they know and to share their experiences. And so I, welcome and look forward to their investigation.
Let's talk about Trump's reaction to Kavanaugh being scrutinized again. Last year, when the whole confirmation hearing was playing out, of course, Trump had great sympathy for the man that he nominated. Trump, of course, like Kavanaugh, is an accused sexual predator. And he, in this week, made a couple of remarkable statements on Twitter. First, he suggested that Kavanaugh should sue the New York Times for libel. And then he said the Justice Department should come to Kavanaugh's rescue. What do you make of this response from our president?
I mean, I would laugh if it wasn't so disgusting, honestly. There's something just particularly foul and rich about people who are victimizers claiming victim status. And I think that that's a classic trick of people who have things to hide and actually have things to be accountable for, is to try and claim the victim stance for themselves. And, that's obviously what we saw last year in the hearings, that Kavanaugh used that approach to great success, unfortunately. So it doesn't surprise me at all that Trump is responding in that way.
The call for Kavanaugh's impeachment has been echoed by several presidential contenders from the Democratic Party as well. It remains to be seen how much support there is in the House and the House Judiciary Committee in particular on this issue of impeachment. And I was looking through this history, Megan. Apparently, there's only been one Supreme Court justice who's ever actually been impeached. And that happened more than 200 years ago. A Supreme Court justice named Samuel Chase, who was expelled who basically faced an impeachment from the Supreme Court. It is a very, very difficult thing to do. I understand that the bar is extremely high. I mean, Kavanaugh squeaked by with just enough votes, but to remove him from the Supreme Court is going to be a tremendous effort, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the House has the opportunity to investigate and potentially impeach him, but the Senate would have to vote to remove him. And I think that that's a very high bar to clear. But regardless, for me right now, I think the focus is on the opportunity of the investigation to finally bring to light a full accounting of Justice Kavanaugh's history and his treatment towards women, and for America to grapple with that again about what it means to have someone on our highest court, to have women in front of him as plaintiffs, as people who have experienced harm, and he's going to make judgments about their experience in the world. I think that no one has a right to a Supreme Court seat, and it is fair for us to hold people given that amount of power to a higher standard. And this investigation is an opportunity for us to ask that question again of if the Senate made the right decision on giving Justice Kavanaugh that level of power, given his history.
So even if the actual achievement of impeachment may be very, very, very low probability, you think it's worth going through that process? Do you think that it sends a message to the Senate that future Supreme Court nominees are going to have to be held to a far, far higher standard than Kavanaugh was held to?
Yes, I hope so. I think that Kavanaugh's confirmation being rushed through the way that it was really set us back in the tremendous work that has happened to really move the bar on our tolerance as a society and as a country on sexual violence and on sexual harassment. And it was an experience of kind of like, okay, I guess we haven't made as much progress as we thought we have. I guess if you have enough power and enough cronies, you can get away with anything. And I think that not letting this issue just get swept under the rug and just throwing up our hands and accepting that now he's a justice and that's, you know, it's done. But using this opportunity to still say, no, this still matters. This still matters and we're still paying attention and we're not content to let the bar settle where the Senate set it.
Well, Megan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for Gender Justice, your organization.
Absolutely. It's genderjustice.us.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Thanks again, Megan.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Megan Peterson, Executive Director of Gender Justice, a legal and policy advocacy organization committed to gender, economic, and reproductive justice. We've been discussing the new scrutiny of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.